All right. So remind me as we keep walking through this series, what is the title of our series? You get a little help tonight. There's a lot of shirts around. Gospel Life. Explain to me, somebody who's really, really smart and intelligent and brilliant and awesome, what does the gospel life mean? All right. Even somebody who's not quite intelligent, smart, and brilliant and awesome. Anybody. Huh? Yeah, it's our shirt. What else? What does it mean, Clay? Yes, live your whole life for Christ. That's awesome. What are some of the examples that we've seen so far as we've walked through this series of a gospel life?
Fasting.
Yeah, this whole thing on fasting. What did that teach us when Jesus was dealing with the Pharisees and talked to him about fasting? What was the lesson we learned? Anybody remember? Yes, Sveta. Like, Jesus is the Lord of even fasting, of even religion. Jesus is more important than anything else that we do. What else? What about when they lowered that guy through the roof? What did we learn from that story?
Determination, faith.
Yeah, like trust in action. Like, if you really believe Christ, put your faith into action. Do something about it. Don't just say it. What are some other stories? Tick tock. All right, so what did the guy who had like the messed up hand who needed to be healed, what did that teach us? Anybody remember? What happened in that story? All right, take your hands and go. Do it. Are you awake now? What happened? Let's try this again. What happened in that story where Jesus healed that guy's hand who had a withered hand? V, you're on fire tonight. What? Do harm or do evil or save a life or take one. What was he trying to say? It was very similar to the whole fasting thing, right?
Yeah.
What did we learn from it? About this. You guys are horrible tonight. I love you, but you're horrible tonight. Yeah. All right. We'll let that be for now. Because apparently, I don't want to kill your brain cells. You need them all. Why don't you guys just open up to Mark chapter 3? Can we handle that? Can we open up to Mark chapter 3 instead? You've had too much school. It's close to the end of the year. I can tell quizzing is not going to go over well. Mark chapter 3, we're at verse 7 tonight. As you're opening or Googling or digitally moving or whatever you do, how many of you guys have ever played Red Rover, Red Rover before? Awesome. How about like, have you ever played kickball? Everybody's played kickball. Everybody's played kickball. You've kicked a ball. That counts. That's kickball. Well, listen, I know this is really, really hard to picture from the way I look now, okay? But I was an actually pretty chunky kid. I know, looking at me now, you'd be like, no, are you? But I was pretty chunky. And so when I would play, like, have you ever done that thing where they pick captains? And like the captains get to like take turns picking, you know, like, you, and then you, and it's always like the most athletic kid who runs the fastest, like a little gazelle, you know. And the chunky kid is always the last to be picked, every single time. Anybody been the chunky kid before? Maybe not chunky, but like you've been the last to be picked at something. How does it feel? How does that feel?
I feel like a loser.
Feels awesome, doesn't it? Yeah, you feel like a loser. It feels horrible. You do, you do. Listen. Well, I was that little kid, and I was always the one who was picked last until finally I realized how to use all this weight for leverage. Now, when you're playing kickball and you know how to use your weight, and when you kick and you swing all that heavy weight behind the ball, that thing goes out of the park every single time. I don't know if you know that, but being chunky and kickball, they go together. So I learned this. My buddies all learned it, and they were like, hey, chunky kid. Like, me? I mean, I know I'm chunky, but why are you pointing at me? I want you for my team. I was like, me? Are you talking to me? He was like, yeah, you. I had finally been picked first for a team. First time ever, all right? The very first time, big old me had been picked first for a team, and I was just like, I couldn't believe it. I was going nuts. Any of you guys ever had like that first time experience where you're like, I finally got picked first and you couldn't even believe it? You're like, what? And you're just like, this is incredible. I feel like I just won an Oscar or something. Or what's an Oscar? Anyway, whatever. I'm not good with awards. You won something really cool. Well, I did. And I discovered then, playing Red Rover shortly after that, that chunky people can kind of lean into it. You take the belly and you lean into the line, you know, and you break that line like butter. And I love butter, you know. So you break that line every single time. So they were like, hey, chunky kid, I started being first at that too. I was getting picked first for everything. And it was like, what's going on? It was the coolest feeling to see like the most athletic kids in the class who are always the captains wanting me for their team. Like I was like first round draft pick. I was like, yeah, chunky guy right here. It's me. It felt great. And as we look at our passage tonight, we're going to look at some guys that probably felt that same exhilaration and that same like disbelief of like me, like really. And they're kind of looking around like us, like you're picking me for this job. And so hopefully you're there by now. We're in Mark chapter 3. Read with me. We're going to start in verse 7. It says, Jesus withdrew with his disciples to the sea, and a great crowd followed from Galilee and Judea and Jerusalem and Idumea and from beyond the Jordan and from around Tyre and Sidon. When the great crowd heard all that he was doing, they came to him. And he told his disciples to have a boat ready for him because of the crowd, lest they crush him. For he had healed many so that all who had diseases pressed around him to touch him. And whenever the unclean spirits saw him, look what they do here. They fell down before him and cried out, "You are the Son of God." And he strictly ordered them not to make him known. And he went up on the mountain and called to him those whom he desired, and they came to him. And he appointed 12, whom he also named apostles, so that they might be with him, and he might send them out to preach and have authority to cast out demons. He appointed the 12, and here it is. Here's the team roster that got picked. Simon, to whom he gave the name Peter, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, the brother of James, to whom he gave the name Boanerges. Name your kid that one day. That is Sons of Thunder. That's awesome. All right. Thor, seriously. Andrew and Philip and Bartholomew and Matthew and Thomas and James, the son of Alphaeus. We recognize that name, right? Yep. And Thaddeus and Simon the Zealot and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. There they are. There's the team. There's the roster. Now, as we read this story, before we go any further, I need a really courageous person. You don't even have to be very smart because I know what we're dealing with tonight. Okay, a little school lag. Not jet lag, but like school lag.
I'm going for it.
You're going for it? I just want you to summarize what we read so I know you guys understood what we even said. Just summarize it. What just happened?
He was naming off the apostles.
Well, before that, like from the beginning. Yeah, yeah, we get that part.
Well, he was saying how he picked them.
Just give me a summary of what we read. Yeah.
Picking out who he was going to choose to like follow him and make other disciples with.
What happened before that? Like from the beginning?
You're
the helper. That's a good start though. The what? What? All right, they needed a boat. I got that much from you and I got confused. But they did. They needed a boat for some because there were a lot of people.
And all the crowds were, all the sick people were gathering around. Yeah.
Yeah, all these people are gathering around and want to be healed, so we needed a boat. What else? What else happened?
Okay, well, the crowds were getting too big, so he was like, let's go to the sea so that we can like be away from them, but they can still be like near us enough so that they aren't like freaking out. And then,
freaking out.
And he was like, well, and then it talked about how he needed like to be away from them, you know, far enough away because there were so many people that they would like crush him if they got, because everyone tried to touch him. And then it started talking.
Do you want to switch with me? You want to go? I'll sit. You're doing a great job. This is awesome. You keep preaching. All right. Yeah, all that stuff. That was a lot. That was great. All right.
Sorry.
One of those crazy memories that you remember everything. All right, so let's start from the beginning. Good job. Yay. That's basically what happens. That was good. Let's start back. You guys are absolutely right. We see Jesus again. And well, we've talked about these things because almost every story we've seen about Jesus has gone almost the same way, right? It almost seems like very repetitious, but these same things keep happening. It's this pattern for a really good reason. So here we go, and here's Jesus. And he goes, he takes his disciples, and they go away to the sea, it says in verse 7. Why do they go to the sea? You guys remember, we've talked about this. Why do you think he had to go by the seashore? So many people. Yeah, that too. He had to go where people could fit, remember? So he'd go by seashores or out in the desert, the wilderness, where there's lots of room because there's so many people, they don't fit around him. And so this story starts off the same way again. But this time it's a little bit different. He ups the ante a little bit. And look what it says. A great crowd followed him. And then it says, from Galilee and Judea and Jerusalem and Idumea and beyond the Jordan and from around Tyre and Sidon, basically from like all over the stinking place. People aren't just coming from that village or that town anymore, just surrounding towns. People are coming from their world, kind of like what they knew of, everywhere. People are literally pouring in because the news is spreading so far about who Jesus is. This is becoming a massive movement. Christ is healing people. He's ministering to people and words getting out as people are being touched by this Messiah. And they're like, this is him. This has got to be him. And they're spreading words so much that people are coming from everywhere just to catch a glimpse of this guy. And so they go, I don't know if you heard that, but whew, they're getting excited from the word in there. I hope you didn't fall in the toilet. Okay. So someone might want to check and make sure they're okay. I'm excited here. So people are coming from everywhere. And look, twice it says it. You guys back with me here? Be nice. Okay. It says twice, the second time, when the great crowd, like he keeps repeating it because he wants us to know how many people. Each time it's more and more. We're seeing this awesome escalation through this story, through this gospel. And Mark wants us to know that this thing is growing. So every time it's like he gives an account of just how many more people are falling in love with this amazing Savior. And so he says, the great crowd, he says it twice. All these people are gathering around him, hearing what he's done, and they came to him. And this is what he told his disciples. Have a boat ready, just like V told us. Have a boat ready because of the crowd. Now, not just because there's a big crowd, but this crowd just got so big that Jesus actually has like this worry here. He's like, we need to be prepared for the size of this massive crowd this time. So we're going to go down by the water, and you guys are actually going to take a boat. And I'm going to get on the boat, and we're going to push it out just a little bit so that these people can't come on me. And then basically, if you're going around healing people, right? Let's say Isaac's Jesus. All right, people, I have leprosy. All I got to do is be like, I believe, and I touch you, and pfft, I'm healed. And people are knowing that. So as they rub up against Jesus or like just pass him in the road, you know, all of a sudden they're getting healed. And they're like, this guy's amazing. So everybody's trying to go up and touch Jesus so they can have healing. Well, when you got a ton of people coming up at you all trying to touch you, like Jesus is like, they're going to crush me. These people are just going to pound on. So I need to do something. We're going to put a boat in the water. We're going to push it out and we're going to keep them at bay so I can talk to them. I can minister to them and there can be some sort of order. There are so many stinking people involved in this thing right now. And so I don't know if you guys have ever been in a big crowd like that. Have you? Like a crowd at a concert, it's just so big, it's like there's this roar and you can barely hear from all the voices and the confusion and you look around and you almost feel that like weird claustrophobic feeling like, oof, like there's so many people here and I feel everybody's shoulders and it's freaking me out, too much touching, you know, like, ah! No? No, that's just me. That's how I feel like when I get hugged too. No, okay, well I have. I was in Guatemala in the capital city and every New Year's, they do this big fireworks show. You guys like Chick-fil-A? Anybody like Chick-fil-A? Chick-fil-A fans? Okay, well, the Guatemalan version of Chick-fil-A is called Pollo Campero. How many Campero fans in here? All right, there's a few. Some people have had it. Now listen, it's not as good as Chick-fil-A, but when you're in Guatemala, it tastes like heaven. That's right. So listen, the owner of Pollo Campero is like a billionaire. And this guy right in the center of the capital city every year for New Year's, he takes this park and he rents it out. And it's all gated off and it's locked up. And in the center of the park, he lets off the most incredible fireworks show I've ever seen. But people aren't allowed in. They all kind of like surround and you have hundreds of thousands of people all from the city that will just pour around this park and press right up against the fence. And the park's virtually empty, just like the guy and his family and some random people that are allowed in there can sit in the park and actually look up at the fireworks. Everybody else stands outside. And so I knew that a friend of this guy, so he's like, yeah, you can go, but you have to show up at a certain time or the crowds will be too much. You won't be able to get in. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Like, I have a VIP pass. I'm getting in. So I show up late. And of course, when I get there, I show up right in the middle of this massive, crazy crowd. I'm like, this is fireworks, people. Like, what is your problem? And so the longer I stand there, the more the crowd builds around me and just gets like super intense, like packed, and I get kind of like pressed up so that as people really want to see the show, they're pressing more and more toward the fence, and I'm getting pushed closer and closer to the fence until I'm just like squished in. And then some people start pushing, so they get upset and like literally start pushing, and the fights start breaking out. This old lady like gave me an elbow, dude, like took me to the ground. I'm just like, what's going on? It's going nuts. And it got so bad that like as I'm pressed up against this fence, the guards inside saw the one like white person in the whole crowd that's like among all these Guatemalans. And so they're like, what's that American doing? And so they literally stop the thing. They open the doors. Everybody like backs off and they like take me inside. I'm like, get walked in. Like, oh, I don't know what's going on. So they walk me in. It was intense because I thought I was just going to get like squished and I wouldn't be able to breathe pushed up against this fence. And so I don't know if you've ever been in a crowd like that. Probably not. But it's disgusting because you feel like you're going to die. I literally am just like getting pressed. Like, is this ever going to stop? Like, are they just going to keep pressing me and just like squish me through like Swiss cheese through this fence? And Jesus says he's in this crowd. It's this type of massive throng of a crowd that he's just like, they're going to crush me. They're going to crush me. So let's push this boat out. You know, it's, to me, it's absolutely incredible that Jesus is drawing this type of crowd. I mean, it shouldn't be that incredible. He's the Son of God. You know, like this guy created heaven and earth. It shouldn't like blow my mind that much, but it does. And like, oh, hi. And I forget where I was. It's just incredible that the Son of God is being followed by these people. You know why? Because they know he's the Son of God. Because everybody in this passage that's encountering Jesus is recognizing who he is. He's not just some prophet that like touches people and they get better. He's not just some cool guy with great stories. As people encounter him, they can see his power and his authority, and they're like, wow, this is the Son of God. And so people are just coming to him in droves. So as we see, like Jesus, he pushes his boat out, all these people around him, and it says in verse 11, whenever the unclean spirits saw him, they fell down before him and cried out, you are the Son of God. So it's not just these people that are noticing it. It's even the demons. And we saw this before. As these demons. Now, think about this. The most powerful beings in all of existence that God created are these angels. Even the ones that fell. They're incredibly powerful. And just by being in the presence of this guy, they're throwing themselves on the ground before him going, don't destroy me, Son of God. Scared out of their minds. That's some real power. That's real authority. And as Jesus comes in contact with them, they're crying out, you're the Son of God. And then look what he tells them. He orders them. He like gives them a command and they obey. He strictly says, hey, don't tell anybody who I am. And they have to just shut their mouths and obey this guy. Like this is some crazy power that Jesus has and people are recognizing it. Demons are recognizing it. And then verse 11, 13. It says, and he went up on the mountain and called to him those whom he desired, and they came to him. So Mark is setting the scene. Some of us are like, how come he keeps repeating this story like over and over? But he's showing us how this thing's escalating, how much more authority Jesus is exerting on earth, how people are recognizing that he is the Son of God, and it's growing to the point where we can't deny his authority. And it's setting the stage for something really important that's happening right here in verse 13. As we see just how much authority Jesus has, who else has the type of authority to be able to do what he's about to do? And so we read this verse. He goes up on this mountain and he calls to him those whom he desired. And they came to him. What do you think that means? Anybody want to venture a guess here? What is this verse saying? He called to him those whom he desired. The ones that he wanted with him? For what? What's he going to go? What's he doing here? Lucas?
Tell them to be the leaders while he is gone.
Yeah, he's calling some important guys. He's got an important task for these guys. He's not just calling, hey, let's all go out and get some Starbucks, guys. He's not just calling them up. This is something huge. Those whom he desired. Now, I don't know if you sat and like thought about the implications for this. Probably not because you've only had like 30 seconds and I've had all week. But I did. I sat and thought about some of the implications of this. Man, these guys, like a little chunky boy in what was I playing? I forgot. Red Rover, and kickball. Like being last all the time and then finally getting picked first. I feel like these guys have that same thing going on. Like, us? Like, you're calling me? I'm not just some dude you're calling because there's nobody better around to choose for the team. Like, I'm the one you want on this team. You literally desire to have me. Out of everybody that's following you, Jesus, we just saw these masses that are all crowded around you. You can pick anybody you want. There's hundreds of thousands of people gathering around you, crushing you just to get close to you. And you look through that crowd and you choose me? Like, whoa. Like, I know I'm your disciple, but you know me better than anybody. You know my sin. You've seen all the bad things about me. You know my faults and my weaknesses. Why would you pick me after all that? And it says Jesus desired to choose these guys. Specifically chose them and wanted them out of all the people he could have chose. And if anybody has the authority to do so, we just saw that Jesus has that. And so they're set up with this awesome seat of authority as he's saying, no, you. And look what they do. They came to him. Why do you think they went to Jesus? Any thoughts? Because you're Jesus. Somebody in junior high was like, wouldn't you? It's like, I guess so, dude. You just told me. Like, seriously, that's a great answer. Wouldn't you? You've just seen what this guy can do. You've seen his power. Wouldn't you follow him when he called you? Wouldn't you come to him if he was like, hey, I'm the king of all creation, and I want you in my team. What? Yes. I'm going. I don't know about you guys, but I'm going. Like, I'm going to come to Jesus. That's ridiculous. Now, I look at myself sometimes, though, and I'm in that boat. Like, do you realize we're in that boat? The king of creation is calling us. The king of creation is specifically choosing and desiring you. And he's calling you. Now, we just said we'd be the first to be like, yes, here I go. I'm going, Jesus. Why wouldn't I? Who wouldn't want to? But I find myself in that position a lot where I'm just like, I'm not that excited about it. I'm just kind of like, oh, man, you really want me to go, Jesus? When really, like, this should be our desire, looking at the king who has all authority and be like, send me. Like, please let me go with you. And so they came to Jesus. They were picked and chosen. And then verse 14, and he appointed 12. He appointed 12. He didn't just choose them. He didn't just kind of like stumble upon them. It wasn't like, yeah, I got nothing better. Come on, dude, I need some help. It was like, I am appointing you. I have a plan for you. I have a specific vision in mind for you. Do you know that Christ has knit you together? That Christ made you exactly how he wants you. That Christ has a plan specifically that he has appointed you. Put your name right there. He didn't just appoint the 12. He appointed you if you have believed on Christ. He chose you. And he's given you this awesome task that you guys, many of us probably don't even know what it is yet. Like, you're still sitting there just like, seriously? Like, I got that? You're in an awesome spot tonight. You know why? Because you haven't, like, you still get to discover what that is. Like, Jesus does have something awesome in store for you if you believed in him. I don't know if you've asked yourself, hey, do I know what that is? Have you asked Jesus, like, hey, what have you appointed me for? Because that's yours. He has. Ask him. Or maybe he's shown you and you're like, oh, I'm not sure. You know, and you need to be like these guys and be like, I'm coming. Here I go. Get out of my way. But you've been appointed. Whether you know it or not yet, if you followed Christ, if you believed in him, he's got something awesome in store for you. He's got an incredible plan. And he knows it. That's the important part. Whether you do yet or not, he knows what it is. And so he's appointed these 12. Why do you think he appointed 12? Any ideas? Just a cool number? Yeah. Smarty pants in the back. That's perfect. Yeah. The 12 tribes of Israel. Well, what do the 12 tribes of Israel have to do with, like, the New Testament and these apostles? Like, what's going on there? Any ideas? It is. It's definitely a symbol. He's showing us something's new, right? All throughout these passages, we've been seeing how Jesus is bringing a new life, a new law, all these new things, a new covenant. We've seen that as we've gone through the book of Mark so far. And now he's showing us how, remember, there are 12 tribes of Israel. They were his people, but they were just Jews. Well, all of a sudden he's saying now, which we saw, Jews and Gentiles can all be part of this awesome family. And so as God's moving forward with his people, he's choosing these 12 guys to represent the 12 tribes of Israel to say, look, the church, my people, can be made up of both Jews and Gentiles. Every single person in this room gets to benefit from this thing. And these guys are going to go out and do what? Make disciples. Anyone know what an apostle means? Not follower. Huh? Yeah, and what is that literally? What can we call that? What type of person is that? Someone who's sent. Like a missionary or a church planter that Jesus is sending out to plant his churches. To like literally start his church. So he calls 12 people. What if I walk down this road? There's 12 of you. They're not really 12, but what if there were? And I was like, you 12. You're going to go start. I was Jesus, by the way, not just Rob, because you'd be like, Rob, you're an idiot. But I was Jesus. And you're like, son of God, what? You're talking to me? And you're like, yes, I want you to start my church. I'm going to send you all over the place, and you're going to start churches, and you are starting my kingdom. What? Us? Like, do you know who you're talking to? Well, you do know who you're talking to, but still, why? Like, what's going on? Jesus calls him, and he appoints him. He says, you guys are gifted to do this. I've got this plan for you. You might not even know what the plan is yet, but I'm sending you out and you're going to start my church. And every person in the entire world is going to benefit from this now. Not just the Jews, but my people are going to be made up of all tribes and tongues and nations. And you guys get to start it. Well, here's the deal. It doesn't just stop with these 12. Like, you might not be called to be one of these apostles, but you are definitely called to do the same mission as these apostles. Did you know that? You guys know what the Great Commission is, right? Go into all the world and what?
Make disciples of all nations.
Oh, and who's that for? Who was that given to? Every believer. And guess what their job was as apostles? To go into all the world and make disciples, right? And start God's church. So guess what? You guys have the same mission. So this appointing he's doing here, if you believe in Christ, that's your mission too. You're being appointed to do that. I don't know if you guys have thought about your five. We've been talking about this. Like, do you have a couple people in your life that you really burden for, that you want to bring closer to Jesus? This is a great way to do this. God has appointed you to do that. God has appointed you to be burdened for people around you and share his good news with them. You might not be like, well, I'm not like, I don't have a master's in like church planting and I can't like start churches and I don't even know how to do it. All you got to do is share the good news and you're doing the job. You guys know who Jesus is, right? Anybody in here know who Jesus is? There you go. You got it. You're qualified. You are qualified to go do this. And so you're not just qualified. Listen to me. Don't miss this tonight. You're not just qualified. You're appointed. He specifically has a plan. Now, you are very, very different from Brandon. You guys are just different people. And so God might send you guys out and you're going to do something and he's not going to do it the same way. He's gifted you in different ways, but guess what? You're both called to do this. And God's going to use your gifts one way and your gifts another way to accomplish this. And he's got this amazing plan to take you and your gifts and your talents and your abilities he gave you to do this mission. Now, here's the deal. A lot of us sit and we think about Christianity and church and gospel life and all this stuff. And we're like, here's my 30 minutes for Jesus in the morning. I read my Bible. And then like on Wednesday nights, I do my hour with Jesus. And I have these times that are my Jesus times, you know, so I'm making time for him. And that's good. You should have time where you sit down and you study his word. That's awesome. I applaud you for that. And you should be around believers on different nights of the week or constantly so you're having fellowship. That's awesome. But when we sit and just go, yeah, this is my time here and this is my time here, what we're not doing is going, this whole thing is his. You get that? Like, this whole life, this entire thing belongs to Jesus, not just those 30 minutes in the morning, an hour on a Wednesday. All of it's yours, Jesus. You've appointed me and called me to live every second of my life for you, and that's the best way I can possibly live it. It's the best thing I can invest my life in, spend my life on. And so these guys are called, but guess what? You're called. As believers, you're appointed and called, and you have this awesome plan. And God knows some of us need to just go, hey, look, I'm ready. Go ahead. Start using me. I'll follow. I'm going to break free from this little Christian box mindset I have of church and like, I'm going to start living the whole thing for you. Go ahead. Let's go. Use me. I'm coming. And so he appoints them. He calls them apostles. So they start his church. And it says so that they might be with him. Why is that important? What does that even mean? Any ideas? Jesus lonely? going to see Mickey at Disney, wants his buddies to see Mickey too. Like, what's going on? Why does he want them to be with him? So he can rub off on him. That's a great way to say it. You hang around Jesus, you become more like Jesus. Man, I really hope you're spending time doing that. I hope you're spending time, like what I just said, studying the Word. You should. That's how you know him. I hope you spend time praying to him and talking to him. I hope you spend time telling him what frustrates you. I hope you do that. He wants to hear it. I hope you spend time around other believers who love him so you guys can like talk about him and get excited about him. I hope you spend time serving other people the way he would. As we start to do all these things, we start to live every aspect of our life completely for him. And we're spending time with him. And listen, we're called so that we can be with him. So that we can spend time with this awesome Savior. And once you become like him from hanging out with him, and he rubs off on you, Jordan, all of a sudden, look what he says we do. And he might send them out to preach. The sent ones, the church planters, the apostles, they're sent out to do what? To preach. Wait a minute. So, should everybody in this room be standing right here tonight with a little microphone on, doing what I'm doing? Maybe not exactly like that, right? But should everybody in this room be sharing the gospel with somebody? Be preaching the word. Be telling people the best news we have to tell. Now, let me challenge you, and I don't say this to make you feel guilty or feel bad about yourself. Where is it?
Here it is. But listen, I thought that was worse than it was.
But listen, I don't say this to make you feel bad about yourself, but we really do need to ask ourselves this question. So stop for just a second. Forget that I just made a fool of myself and dropped the mic on the fire thing. Close your eyes for a second. Clear your mind. Are you sharing this good news with people? As I ask you this question I'm about to ask you, are people fluttering into your heart? Are they popping in your mind? Do you have people in your life that you're sharing the gospel with? Do names pop in your head? Do faces start to show up that you really are concerned for? People you love like dearly that you want them to know the gospel. You want them to know Jesus. You can open your eyes, but listen, we should all have people like that. And I don't think there's anyone in this room that doesn't have some people on your heart. But I do think that a lot of us need a wake-up call and need to start doing this. For those people that we say we love so dearly, are we sharing that good news with them? Are we preaching to them? And I'm not talking about going to Guatemala. I'm talking about people in your life right now, right here. Some of you have unsaved parents. You love your parents. Are you sharing with them this good news? Some of y'all have unsaved brothers and sisters that are far from God, and they need to hear this. Do you love them? Share this with them. You get friends at school. You have people on your sports teams. You know who they are. They tell you to your face they're far from God, and they don't care. Does it burden you? Share this good news. It's not just that God said, hey, this is a good thing. He literally appointed you to do this. It should be the joy of your heart to be able to give someone incredible news. Like, there's nothing better I can tell you. Everything else should bore you in comparison to this. You're not going to burn in hell forever. There's a God who created you and loves you. There's no better news than that. Try to top it. Try. No, don't really try. That'll take too long. But listen, can you flip to the next verse, Dave, real quick? Here's a key phrase for you as we end this. And have authority to cast out demons. And you're like, whoa, are you going to get all weird on us, Jones? Like, what's going on? Blah! No, I'm not going there. I want to point out that word, the third word, that big old A word right there. Read it for me. So you're like, hey, so why does Mark keep repeating the same story of how people are responding and demons are responding to Jesus over and over again? And then he ends this whole thing with this phrase as he ties it all together. There's that authority of Christ. Listen, he's not like, hey, Summer, I want you to go out and do this, but I'm not going to be with you. So good luck. See you in heaven. Bye-bye. You know, like, Jesus is saying, Summer, if you're following me, guess who has all the authority of the universe? The one who established it when he came and beat death and sin, Jesus. And so if you're following him, You're walking with Jesus' authority. He doesn't just appoint you and send you. He empowers you. And so now as Zach walks with the Holy Spirit inside of him, Zach has the very power of God as he shares and does what God planned for him and is telling him to do as he's using Zach's gifts so he can go out with this, with the authority of Jesus Christ. Not so Zach looks good. Not because Zach's really powerful, but so that Jesus looks good and gets the glory. And because Jesus is powerful. And if Zach's following him, he's got this authority. And God's going to do some ridiculous stuff through. You can't even begin to imagine what's going to happen as you start to really live for Christ. But some of us need to break through that mindset, like I said before, of being like, this is my time. This is what I do. And say, I'm going to be crazy. I'm going to be a wild man for Christ and really live this gospel life, the entire thing, and see what happens. Live it all for Jesus, appointed by him, empowered by him, and hold on. Because you ain't going to be ready for what he's going to do through you. But you got to take that step like these guys did. I'm going up to that mountain. Call me up there, Jesus. I'm not the fat kid anymore. I'm with Jesus. You know, like, here I go. I'm following you, Christ. Send me. All right? And then we get this awesome roster at the end of these people, these 12. And as I'm not going to read through all these names, but as you read through it, I want you to put your name in there. Sometimes we look at it, we're like, oh, a bunch of old guys that like died a long time ago. Nobody who knows who they are. They did some cool stuff, but I guess, I don't even know. As you read that, if you stick in your name, Caitlin Denier, you know, right there. Holly Searle, right there. Paul Watka, right there. You just plug in your name. As we read through this list of people who are appointed, they're called to build God's church, and they're empowered by Jesus, and you are living this gospel life just like them. You belong in this roster. You might not be one of these apostles, but you are definitely a church planter for Jesus Christ. So don't think, oh, I'm just another Christian. You know, Jesus might do something, might not. No, no, your name belongs right here. In this list, on this team, because Jesus specifically chose and picked you for his team. So play hard. Play hard for him. Because he wants you on the team. Now there are some people here tonight that are wearing these shirts. And they're doing that with their spring break right now. They're going to go to Guatemala. And will you guys actually come on up? We're going to pray for them. Come up and then get out of the way real quick because we're not done. Shh, come up quietly. Look, there's a bunch of people here tonight that are like, Jesus is calling us. We're going to go. All right? They're calling us. He's calling us, and we're going. We're going to try this thing. We're going to give up our spring break where we can be doing whatever else we want. And we're going to go to see what God wants to do through us. That's awesome. But I also know it's not just these people doing that. I know that there's a lot of people still right here in this room that's doing the same thing. God has said, hey, look, I want to use you for this. And you're serving him in other ways. We want to pray for you too. I don't know what you're doing with your spring breaks. But if you're doing something incredible for God, hang on. He's going to use you. So I want us to pray for them, but at the same time, I want to ask you guys, as they're praying for you, there's a bunch of people right here that are doing the same thing, but here at home, or maybe in some other places. I want you to be praying for them as they spend their spring break living out the gospel life. Because it doesn't matter if we're in Guatemala or in Merritt Island or wherever else you might be going for your spring break, we're all living this gospel life. Does that make sense? This isn't, hey, everybody sign up for Guatemala next year so we have a big group going. This is, we all need to be living a gospel life wherever we are. That's what Jesus wants for us. So will you pray for them, and will you guys pray for them? And let's lift each other up that every person in this room lives this thing out. And we give it all to Christ. All right? I'm going to lead us, and you just kind of, you guys pray, all right? Father God, we love you so much. There is no better news in all of creation than what your Son has done for us. The love that you have for us. And Christ, I pray that as we go wherever it might be, Lord, whether we're going to Guatemala, whether we're staying here, whether you're sending us somewhere else, that we would be full of your love and your power and your authority, God, that we'd have eyes to see people who are far from you, that need love, that need to hear the good news of Jesus Christ. God, give us hearts that break for these people. Give us hands that serve these people. Christ, give us a desire to truly live for you because you called us and appointed us. God, give us trust in our hearts that you know best, that we follow your plan. Keep us all safe during this spring break, God, and I just pray that we can come back here and celebrate and rejoice the amazing things that you've done through us because we're living gospel lives for you. We love you, Jesus. It's in your name we pray. Amen.